This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. Noel, how are you doing this morning? And you're not allowed to count down to the weekend.
Thursday Junior. Friday Junior. Sorry, it's not Thursday Junior. That was yesterday.
I threw you off a little bit there.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, I'm feeling good. Actually, it's not because it's Friday Junior. I'm just feeling good today.
Fantastic. We've always got a great show lined up for all of you. And in case you hadn't heard, vaccination started yesterday with the Prime Minister and the Health DG. And there are some fun headlines which we will get into in the terms, and I mean fun, not in the sense of the news, in the sense of the, they're all trying to be punny. And we will go through a little bit of a competition later at 6:45 to determine the punniest of them all. But before all of that, we've got a bunch of stories to share with you. Noel, what are we covering in about 10-15 minutes?
Well, I didn't pick this story. Someone did. I shouldn't take credit for it. But it's something about the school system. And as we know, the education system has to change and evolve, and especially during this COVID-19 pandemic. So I think Australia is doing something quite interesting.
Yeah, a particularly interesting story, this one. And we will take a look at it and discuss in a few minutes. And after that, at 6:30, we take a look at international headlines. And while we had our rollout of our own vaccinations here, the first batch of COVAX vaccines, free COVAX vaccines were delivered as well. We'll talk as well about the Hong Kong budget and a bit of news out of there. And if we have some time, we'll talk about how apparently Brisbane is the preferred bidder for the Olympic Games in 2032. So a lot to cover there. 6:45, of course, we take a look at the local papers and portals to keep you informed of what's happening in the country. And as usual, you can always get in touch with us on Twitter at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Let us know all your thoughts and questions on all the stories we're covering today. But right now, we're going into a few messages. When we come back, what are the best ways to work with a mentor or mentee? Keep it here to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. That was Sweet Home Alabama by Lynyrd Skynyrd. One of my favorite songs. It's a really great way to start the day. And I'm Roshan Kunnison with Noel Lim this morning in the studio. And we're talking about mentor-mentee relationships, or at least what are some of the best ways to work with a mentor, or in reverse, work with a mentee. Noel Lim, I'm going to kick the can over to you. What are some of your top line thoughts here?
I think a mentor-mentee relationship is a great one to have. I think it's always great to have a mentor. And actually, for a mentor, it's also great to have a mentee, because sometimes you can also learn a lot from each other. But I think just want to say that, like in this, what this article is trying to point out, that sometimes the relationships don't start off on the best footing, because I think the best mentors can be your most unconventional characters, and maybe not the nicest, right? Because they just tell you as it is, right? They have no time to kind of gloss it up. So one thing about mentors, and I listened to this talk on Google Talks by Jordan Harbinger. He's a podcaster. He's quite a popular podcaster. Anyway, he began his talk for Google about a mentor that he had. It was his first mentor when he joined a law firm. And it was very awkward for him because that mentor never showed up for work. So you can imagine that he never met his mentor, and he was basically the last person to be mentored in the firm. Later, he did meet the mentor, and he found out that this guy hardly shows up for work, but he was never fired by the firm. He was, in fact, quite a well-paid partner. And he later found out it was because his value is not by showing up at work. His value was outside the firm. He brought in sales. He was basically one of the most money-making partners. But the point here is that if your mentor is not your nicest person, the one that you can see most frequently, that's probably the guy or girl that you need to latch on to.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be some kind of value learning from others, right? Especially those who've got experience and basically the mentors that you could possibly have. And I'm still unsure about the whole whether a forced mentor works or not. You know, there's an organic and inorganic mentorship that can come about, right? But there's always something to be learned, even if the mentor isn't involved. Because the way I look at it, you can either shadow someone and just watch and learn, right? Essentially, there is always something that you can gain from that. Because a lot of times mentors can be busy, and that's something to keep in mind, that their time can be, constrained. And instead of complaining about it, you want to tap into that value, right? So from my own experience, I think If you can have targeted discussions or just keep a list of questions, watch and learn, and then be like, oh, how does he or she do this? How does she manage to keep this kind of hours and balance things off? How do you, all the different questions that you want to at the end of the day aspire to. And personally, I don't like the concentration risk with having one mentor. And I think it's important to have a multitude of mentors because one person doesn't know everything. And you can learn from multiple people. So diversified mentorship, that's the word I want to use now. Because, I mean, my dad is my mentor in a lot of ways. So is my mom. But in the professional working space, I've had a whole slew of teachers who've come along, whether they know it or not, who've influenced me in different ways. Not always, they all weren't always as direct. They all weren't always chirpy and nice, and that you don't need that. You're in a mentor-mentee relationship. What you're looking for is growth and value, and only you can really determine that. And yes, of course, it comes down to your personality as well, right? You got to kind of know how you learn best. But I guess this is just some of the things that I've learned. And from a mentee point of view, I mean, I'm not that experienced, but I have, I'm at a point where high school kids want to ask me questions and things like that. It's also kind of like really, you've got to get to their level and kind of understand and empathize with where they're coming from, right? And that's if you as a mentor want to deliver value. Then if that's a conscious thing you want to do, then you've got to go to that level and be like, okay, this is how you can approach it.
Yeah, so you don't have to have one mentor. You can have one for about family life, and then one for work, and also about work, right? The tendency is to reach out to someone far more experienced than we are, because we want to maybe develop some technical competencies or just some maturity, right? But it's also, I think, very important to reach out to people who are in the sort of the new economy, right? They are in that digital economy, that digital space. You want to also get that kind of mentor because the world is changing so fast, so you kind of need someone who keeps thinking forward, keeps thinking ahead. And I don't count mentors as just a real life person. Also, like from people who do podcasts, you know.
I was just going to ask you, what do you think about digital mentorship?
Yes, yeah. So I do listen. They don't know me. I don't know them. But, you know, I listen out to what they say. And of course, we shouldn't just believe everything they say, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you should also watch what they do. But I think that is quite useful for me, I find. And, you know, it's not just about getting advice and all that, right? It's also, mentors can open doors for you. So I would say for myself, I personally have helped a few interns in the past get jobs or even just get a foot in, right? Interviews at least. And also I've been a referee for a number of people in BFM when they left. So it's not because of me they left. But, you know, they've asked me to be their referee. So So I think, you know, that door opening is really quite crucial. You know, someone who's going to be your career champion.
Yeah, I quite like the whole digital mentorship element. And yes, it's a one more of a one-way street, but there is a lot to be. It's about learning and value, right? What can you gain from that relationship? It may not be as, with everything in life, you're going to have quality and quantity, right? You can have one mentor that is super quality and like you have access to them and all the kind of, and they're approachable, all of that. And that's maybe the one mentor to rule them all. Or you can have a diversified pool of mentors that can, that may not be as quality as that one, but in their own respects and their own pillars, they help you kind of become a better person and more learned as you go on with time. But I always have that fear, right? And this goes with my investing as well, that one concentration risk is such a painful thing, you know. And in this world, things change so fast that I kind of bend towards the diversified mentality quite often.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Right now for me, I'm following this person, Cal Newport. I've been listening to
Cal Newport.
Some
great
of his podcasts. Yeah. Like he says, you know, you don't need to have social media. Thinking of cutting down too now.
Interesting. How will we ever speak to you again then, Noel, if you do that? But Cal Newport is the author of Deep Work, a very interesting book. If you have the time, you should check it out. But on that note, though, you can always get in touch with us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Let us know what you think. What do you think about this whole mentor-mentee relationships? Who have been some? How have you learned the best from your mentor or vice versa? You can always get in touch with us on Twitter at BFM Radio. We're going into a few messages. We'll be back in just a bit. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noah Lim in the studio this morning. And that was Duplex by Small Black. Sorry, I misread that as Small Back.
It wouldn't have made a difference to me.
Noel, we're talking about education right now, and this is a particularly interesting interesting article, considering that the New South Wales education system is trying out a version of what is called differentiated education, essentially untimed syllabus in a way. So you individualize the education based on the children that are the specific child. This sounds super complex and possibly a pain to execute, but in theory would be possibly quite beneficial.
Yeah, so I think what it does is that it follows the student's progress. If you can master these subjects, you can move on to the next grade. And if you can't, you stay back and there is more reinforcement. So like you say, I think it's a pain to actually implement it, but it sounds good for the student because, you know, unless they clear a certain level of literacy, you know, it's probably not safe to actually promote them because, you know, then they will just end up falling further behind in their subjects. So this individualized kind of education, the upside is if you're clever and you're really hardworking, you can progress really quickly, and maybe by 14 years old you'll finish your high school education and you can just go on to university. But I think the downside is that there's always that social emotional cost, right? And I can speak about my mom. You know, she did her matriculation in Australia when she was, I think, 14 years old, because she graduated from university in 19 years old.
Wow.
So she said, you know, when she was doing her matriculation, she said she was still collecting stamps, right? Because she was 13 years old at that time. And then but her classmates were 16 years old, 17 years old, and they were talking about boys and makeup. So she said she just always felt very disengaged in class. I mean, academically, you're fine, but, you know, just socially, it can be quite not so nice, lah. And then the downside is for kids who maybe struggle and they fall behind, they may get demotivated if they find themselves in a class of people who are far younger than them.
Yeah, so this is the thing, right? And this article from The Conversation, which is quite a academic skewing website, I think. I quite like it. They quote an education philosopher, Gert Beister, who outlines three major purposes of schooling: qualification, socialization, and subjectification. Now, the qualification part, you need the paper, lah. You know, that's, I think, the long story short, this is why a lot of us do what we do. In terms of education and even the certs that people were taking last year, right, on Coursera and all of that. But socialization is so important as well. And there are, you know, schools and education is such a complex ecosystem. And in when you start changing it, there are going to be unintended downstream consequences of those actions, right? So one of the things was, yes, being around your age group is also very important, because you can't deny that is going to be an important part. But when you start making it so that, oh, if I do very well here, I can skip a few years, you start even putting more emphasis on the grades situation. And I think over the last few years, it's become more apparent that we need to start focusing on the other stuff, like the socialization, the soft skills. Academics are important, but if our kids grow up and aren't able to communicate, that will impact their job prospects just as much, really, if you take a look at it. And there's a reason why PTS no longer exists. We used to have the ability, when you were standard three, that you could skip a year and jump over to standard five and skip standard four. I think the education ministry rolled that back for a multitude of reasons, including one that 1 year made an impact on a lot of kids, because either they were put into groups that were maybe a bit too mature for them, and then it had its own impacts, right? I have no doubt that this kind of program, this differentiated program, will help the more studious and the more the kids who are more eager. But sometimes keeping a diversified classroom is important. You need a mix of smart kids, kids who aren't as intellectually stimulated, kids who are more sociable, because that's where you expose them to different elements of society. If you start stratifying classrooms, again, like in Malaysia we have, right, best class and not so academically inclined classes, you start creating little bubbles here and there.
Yeah, so in Finland, for example, the classes are mixed. There is no positioning, so to speak, no class A, class B, that sort of kind of grading. So if you change the system here, you can't just change one part. The schooling system is such that you have to start looking at your examination system as well. The retraining of teachers and the school leadership also needs to understand the social implications of making these changes to cater for individualized learning. But I think, you know, some baby steps can be taken towards a more personalized kind of learning. For example, I think it's very important, first of all, to just develop that culture of self-directed learning, right? And more so pertinently in this COVID-19 situation where people are studying at home, you need to be an independent learner. So first of all, schools just need to cultivate the culture. Otherwise, you're just creating adults who just wait for instructions, who, you know, just don't just think, like, you know. So you need people who can just think independently. And then you, okay, so there will be some kids who are really going to be exceptionally gifted, and maybe you can have a special school for that. I think Permata was meant to be that solution in Malaysia, but I think maybe execution wasn't so robust. And then, and using technology to personalize practices, personalize your learning. So if you know, if the system picks up that you're quite weak in certain parts of algebra, it will keep pumping you with questions to help you improve on that, like in Khan Academy.
I mean, YouTube and Instagram know what you like and what you don't like. And so maybe you can make that algorithm work for you in the academic sense, right? And I am very sure that Coursera and all these other education platforms use a form of that, right?
Yeah, Khan Academy does.
Khan Academy actually was great. I loved it. I used it when I was doing the version of A-levels. I did the Canadian one because it helps really break down different concepts. And here's the thing, we are seeing education hit the digital world and break and fragment into different ways. There are already modular ways to tap into this. It's about whether there's initiative in all of that. And this is a whole conversation we can have another day, I guess. But the big question always comes down to, yes, ideas are great, but what is the execution going to be like, right? End of the day, you can have the best plans in the world, and Malaysia has had some of the best plans in the world, but execution risk is so important. And that's why a lot of times you create the lowest common denominator system, because you need everyone to get on board, as opposed to creating a system where only a few can execute and thrive upon. And that's something that, you know, will be a prevalent thing, right? There's a reason why when you start taking something to scale, the economies of scale is basically, how can we make this at a certain level consistently and of a particular quality, as opposed to making it the best. But hey, that's just what we think. Let us know what you think over on Twitter at BFM Radio, or over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. We are going into the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin, and to take you there, End of the Line by the Traveling Wilburys. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that was Muhammad Ali by British dance band Faithless, a single released back in September of 2001. Wow, 20 years ago. Can you imagine? You know, right now we're taking, before we head into the international news, we've got a comment here on WhatsApp. This is based on our conversation we had earlier about the individualized learning, Noel. And the comment here is, just follow the Australian education system. They know what they are doing. Malaysian education system is doomed. That's a pessimistic view, but I think it's also it taps into a certain vein, right? Because end of the day, it's not an uncommon thing to hear that people are generally quite pessimistic. And, things like the whole Didik TV situation didn't help, right, in terms of optics and perception.
Yeah, so I think Malaysia has some basic issues that they need to fix. Well, Australia has always been a bit, I think, on the forefront of on education innovation. They've introduced like charter schools in some states, and their education system is quite well ranked according to the PISA scores.
Yeah, and actually, I'm a fan of their university system because of the modules that you can pick, and you can kind of cater the situation, but you have compulsory subjects to take. So a bit more modular there, but that's just one comment on Twitter right now. On WhatsApp. You can always join us on the conversation at on Twitter at BFM Radio, or over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Now let's get into some international news, starting with the BBC has reported that we're seeing the first rollout of, actually not the BBC, everyone is reporting the fact that we're seeing the first COVAX vaccine rollout. And this is in Ghana, a delivery of 600,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine arrived there yesterday. And the recipients are due to be the healthcare workers.
Yeah, so just to explain this COVAX scheme, it was set up by WHO and a few coalitions to ensure that poorer countries will also be vaccinated. So the richer countries will buy vaccines and help finance access for poorer nations. So Ghana is the first recipient of a batch of AstraZeneca doses. So this is great for them. As we know, Ghana, I think, has a population of over 30 million people. And so this would be extremely useful for them. And I think they're going to start vaccinating from next week onwards.
Yeah, vaccines are supposed to be targeted towards the healthcare workers and those above 60, as well as people with underlying health conditions and senior officials. We're also going to jump over to the Hong Kong budget, which was announced yesterday, just very quickly. It's a bit more market-centric, but Hong Kong is the financial capital of Asia, so it's always good to pay attention to what's happening there. And it's headed for a record budget deficit, leaving little room for the kind of cash handouts and stimulus that they saw last year during the coronavirus outbreak. The financial secretary Paul Chan noted is expected to deliver a muted budget as he tries to basically. It's always that thing, right? You got to balance the books one way or another. There are always fiscal pressures to manage, but also demands on the economy, and their economy has shrunk 2 years in a row. Even before the pandemic, they had issues with the US-China trade war. They had other trade issues to deal with. And let's not forget the protests as well that's been going on for some time. So they've also been hit with a triple whammy or quadruple whammy of sorts, depending on the timeline. So this is going to be, we'll cover this a little bit more during Market Watch, of course, with Vishnu Varathan of Mizuho Bank, get his thoughts on it. But one of the things that was particularly notable was that they increased the stamp duty for the first time since 1993. And this is the stamp duty on stock purchases from 0.1% to 0.13%. And it looks like the markets had a little bit of negative reaction to that. I think the Hang Seng was down 3%.
Yeah, because considering, it's quite a big deal, right, for Hong Kong being a financial hub. So like I think all government leaders, Hong Kong is focusing on containing the epidemic, and they will press ahead with the vaccination program so that businesses can go back as usual, as fast as possible. And so another thing, I think what intrigued me also was what Hong Kong is doing also. They are distributing electronic spending vouchers to all residents above 18 years old. And I think they found that, I think they initially had this program and they found that it was taken up, like I think 80% of there was an 80% uptake. So they quite like this program. And so they are launching this again. I think 1,000 Hong Kong dollars to be handed out per month.
And I'm going to quickly jump over to a story that caught my attention, which was the Olympics. This year we're supposed to see Tokyo Olympics in 2020 Tokyo Olympics in 2021. But they're already, starting to plan ahead. And it looks like the International Olympic Committee has named Brisbane, Australia as the preferred bidder. And just the preferred bidder to host the 2032 Olympic Games. Several cities and countries have expressed an interest in hosting the Games, of course. And this includes our neighbors, Indonesia, but also Budapest, China, Doha, and Germany's Ruhr Valley. Sydney hosted the Olympics in 2000. So it'll be interesting to see if it goes back to Australia this time around. Not this time around, in 2032.
Yeah, so in 2021 is hopefully Tokyo. I mean, as in we hope this year it will happen. And then Paris will be 2024 and LA in 2028.
Yeah, so this is going to be interesting. It'll also be very interesting to see how the 2021/2020 Tokyo Olympics plays out this year. But as usual, you can always let us know what you think over on Twitter at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We're always curious to hear what you think about all the things we've discussed over the past hour or so. Right now, we're going into a few messages, and when we come back, a look at the local papers and portals. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Noel Lim in the studio this morning, and that was Stevie Wonder with I Was Made to Love Her. And we're taking a look at the local papers and portals. And I think first thing we've got to do, Noel, is compare the headlines around the punniest one for the vaccination that we saw yesterday. So I've got the Star, and I think it's taken the lead here because the Star has gone with a shot in the arm. It's both literal and punny. What did the NSD go with?
The NSD is injecting Pope. And on the front page is Muhyiddin being jabbed.
Sorry, Noel, I think what was it? Injecting hope. That's the NSD's front page.
Yes, that's right.
All right. I've got the Malaysian Reserve as well. And the Malaysian Reserve has not gone with anything. Its headlines are adversely affected by MCO theme parks to reopen and DRB HighCom's 4Q profits soar. So they did not go with a punny take on the jab, on the vaccinations yesterday, but they did put a photo of Tan Sri Muhyiddin on the front page he's holding a placard here saying, Saya telah di vaccine. So I think right now, the Star's in the lead here for punniness, but let us know what you think. What are the headlines on Utusan and Sina?
Well, they went for for quite straightforward headlines. So Utusan says, Fasa Pemulihan, and then subtitles, PM Disuntik Vaccine, Vaksinasi Bermula, Pemulihan Economy. And then Sina Harian went with Suntikan Bermula. So rather straightforward. So I guess it's NST and the star, right?
All right. So do you like a shot in the arm or injecting hope? Let us know over on Twitter at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. This is an... Yeah, it's just a little bit of fun this morning. But Noel, let's get on to some serious news. What's on the NST?
Yes, so this is on page 2, and Khairy did quite a long press briefing yesterday, which I think it was quite a robust one. So he gave some updates. Apparently, more than 500,000 people nationwide have registered for the immunization program, 505,000 people. So now the thing is, I don't know about you, but I think this number is actually a bit low, don't you think? 500,000, considering we have a population of at least working adults of 10 million people. So, yeah, and then he says, anyway, he gives an update that he says the registrants, like I think like you and me, will be in that second or third phase, and we'll receive our confirmation 14 days before the appointment date. So you have time to prepare, and that's essentially the message. And he also updated that I think there were some concerns that, you know, when we talk about hospital frontliners, what about the cleaners, the contract workers? So Khairy has assured that they will also be given priority, given that, you know, their role is quite, their scope of work is quite broad, right? Because they are all over the hospital. So they will also be immunized quickly.
Yeah, and I've got the star in front of me, and they've got well, on the second page here, essentially, they're reporting that the Agong has, and I think there was a letter that basically said that the parliament can convene basically when a date is deemed appropriate. So this is something to keep in mind and see what kind of observations and reactions come out from it. And definitely, one of these things that I'm sure a lot of politicians are paying attention to on the multiple sides of the multiple aisles. And of course, the PM being the first to be vaccinated, he said it was painless and like any normal injection. I think it's very important to lead by example here, and having the PM and the DG do it gives you a sort of, it's a symbolism to it, right? It's a, end of the day, people need to see their leaders. It's leadership by example, really.
Yes. So, yeah, I think they are quite concerned that that a lot of people may be not coming forward to get themselves jabbed. So he says, Muhyiddin says, if you look at me now, I did not feel a thing. I'm feeling fine. So, you know, come forward, don't worry, and get vaccinated. So, you know, just to clarify again, taking this jab is not a test of manhood. You can just come forward, and it's a very straightforward procedure.
Yeah, I've got a story here on Malay Mail that says that over 600,000 have registered through the MySejahtera app. So that is one of those avenues that you can use to register yourself. And if it's not on the, if you don't see the option there, I think it's just a matter of getting the app updated on your respective phones.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's the updates are out on both iOS and Android.
Yes, it is already on Android. I've already registered myself.
Fantastic. Let's go with what's on the reserve here. Let's see. So the reserve didn't go with any punniness, or in fact, didn't go with a headline about the jab, going with the adversely affected by theme parks and that they're eager to open. They're quoting the Sunway theme parks here as well. And essentially, this is one of those businesses that's been, well, it's been hit hard because it hasn't been open, right? At any of these, whether it's Legoland or Sunway Lagoon, or even, I'm not even sure if places like Kidzania are open during this time. All these more entertainment areas, theme parks, have been shut. And with this, basically no cash flow has been coming in. I guess they also need their own kind of, I guess, a pathway, right? Like how, what is the recovery plan for them? And I think Aquaria also is one of those individuals, one of those companies. This is going to be tough because even when the economy does open up, tourism is such a big part of these businesses.
Yeah, so I think everyone is just, you know, banking on this vaccination system, vaccination program to make a lot of headway. Apparently, we are 2 days ahead of schedule. So I think Moody's Analytics has a piece here. Their economist is saying Malaysia's real GDP is expected to return to pre-pandemic level by the first quarter of next year. So, you know, sit tight on that. And he said the implementation of the vaccine programs globally and at the domestic level will stimulate local growth and demand, and hopefully, you know, inject some life into our tourism sector.
Yep. And let us, with that, we're going into a few messages. Let us know what you think over on Twitter at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. To take you to the 7 a.m. news bulletin, we've got T-Rex with Hot Love. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.